Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Boss Files. I'm Poppy Harlow. If you're a basketball fan, or really any kind of sports fan, this spring has felt very different. Major League Baseball is delayed, March Madness is canceled, and the NBA is suspended until further notice. For Cleveland Cavaliers player and five-time NBA All-Star Kevin Love, this has been a big adjustment. Normally, this time of year, he'd be spending nights playing for cheering fans. Instead, his days now sound more like this.
Today, I wanted to talk about loneliness. You know, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to try and put a face to it or understand.
Like most of us, Kevin is self-isolating. He's also spending time on Instagram, reaching out to his more than 3 million followers about mental health, an issue he's passionate about and supports through his Kevin Love Fund.
And there was a New York Times article that I read last week, and I'll have to read it off the page here. It says that the impact of social isolation and loneliness on longevity equals that of smoking 15 cigarettes a day and exceeds the risk associated with obesity, excessive alcohol consumption, and lack of exercise.
Kevin is at home in Ohio right now, doing a lot of, well, reading, walking his beloved dog, and spending an hour and a half every day walking on the treadmill. Yeah, an hour and a half. I talked to Kevin about what life is like for a professional athlete in the middle of a suspended NBA season, and he tells me about his personal struggle with anxiety and depression, and how that has motivated him to talk so openly about mental health.
This is really a pandemic that nobody's talking about. I can't really put my finger on something or reach out and touch something that is a bigger thief of human potential.
We talk about what he's doing to bring awareness to the issue and how he's giving back to the workers affected by the suspension of the NBA season. Here's my conversation with Kevin Love. Kevin Love, thanks for taking the time.
I appreciate you having me on.
We're going to spend a lot of time talking about mental health and isolation and helping one another in a moment like this, in a crisis like this. But before we get there, if we could just start with how dramatically things have changed. I mean, looking at the NBA schedule that was, your team, the Cleveland Cavs, were supposed to be playing, I think, the Brooklyn Nets down the block from where I live, and the Atlanta Hawks right now, and that's obviously not happening. So what's your life like these days?
I think just like everybody else, finding ways to stay busy, stay active. I mean, I'm such a creature of habit, so routine for me, getting up, making my bed, then you get into breakfast, and I always make sure that, or I always try and shower and put my workout clothes on, so it's incentive to you know, get my work done early and work out. But it's just,
it's the only way you go. I have to do that immediately in the morning on the weekends, or I will just eat pancakes and not go to the gym.
100%, or you know what, I'm going to have another coffee, or it just like then lethargy sets in, and you just, you know, you kind of keep pushing it back, pushing it back, pushing it back. But I think that's almost a form of resistance. I have to stay active and have to feel like I'm checking things off, no matter how small, to feel like I'm accomplishing something. So that's how I'm navigating this time. But I know everybody's finding their own ways to find joy and happiness.
Well, speaking of joy, you like to quote Shakespeare. Do you want to share it with us?
Hey, things won are done. Joy's soul lies in the doing. That's actually at the very top of my notes. I've had that quote probably for 10 years, and it's so true. Just, you know, accomplishing things, getting things done, feeling like you're part of the winning side of history and the part of something bigger than yourself. That's something that I've really kind of geared toward or leaned toward, and is very fitting for what I'm trying to do and, you know, kind of who I am as a person.
Things won are done. Joy's soul lies in the doing. You have micro goals, like every day, even now when there are no games and you don't know when the next one will be. What are micro goals that help Kevin Love get through the day?
Something I've tried to do now is even on days when I'm taking it a little bit lighter in the gym, I'm trying to, whether it's outside walking my dog, dogs are great because they force you to get outside, or just, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to afford and have a treadmill in the space in my house. And I've been trying to walk 6 miles a day. I mean, while it might seem like a lot, for me, it's one of those things that I just have to check off. So if I do 3 miles in the morning,
that's like an hour and a half of walking.
It is exactly, you know, it's funny for me, I'm trying to do, 4 miles an hour. So it's about an hour and a half of walking, but it could be something as simple as making your bed. It could be something as, for me, it's hydrating, getting to bed at the same time. So those little goals, and most of mine are, I feel like, routine based or health based, but those are incredibly important for me and add up over time to make you more well-rounded and more evolved.
What do you do on the treadmill? Are you, I don't think you're the kind of guy that is like reading your phone and sending emails and like falls off the back. Are you like meditating? Are you talking to your mom on the phone? Are you listening to podcasts?
I am actually, I'm listening to podcasts. I also am reading as well. Well, not reading my phone, but an audiobook. I'm listening to something, or depending on what my mood is at the time, I'll be listening to music. So, you know, typically if it's something that you know, it's not going to be like I'm lifting weights or doing high-end cardio, that sort of thing. So I'm typically listening to something slightly more soothing, but also, you know, with the walking, still sticking in that sort of rhythm.
All right. So let's get to the matter at hand and why I really wanted to talk to you. Let's go back to 2017, because this was a pivotal moment, changed your life completely. You're on the court. It's November 2017. You're playing against the Hawks and you have a panic attack.
Yes.
For people who haven't read your powerful essay in the Players Tribune, what happened?
Yeah, so it was on November 5th of that year, and it had been actually leading up to that point very, very, you know, tough for me. There had been a number of things that, you know, had dipped in my life, or things that I was struggling with, and things that had sent me into a depression. So I was, you know, I wasn't able to stay present. I was looking back and just dealing with things that I was putting off or compartmentalizing, or saying, you know what, I'll deal with that later. And, you know, as I feel like America, or even, you know, if you look across the world, I feel like we celebrate people who kind of beat their emotions into submission. And that was me.
Yeah. Especially men, right?
Especially men. Yeah. And I can speak at length about that too, because I was one of those kids, and that was my playbook. And I actually talk about that, not at length, but a little bit in that Players Tribune article. But then moving forward, it just seemed hopeless. Like, I think, you know, the opposite of happiness is hopelessness. Like, it's a crisis of hope. So if you look at, you know, anxiety or depression, or really any mental illness or mental health problem, I feel like that's at the root of all of it. But a lot of the pillars in my life had continued to fall, you know, whether it be family, whether it be relationships, whether it be, you know, things happening outside of the basketball court. But the basketball was my last pillar to fall, where we were expected to be such a, you know, a great team, a team that was expected to go to the finals, you know, had really high hopes, and we started awful. And myself, I wasn't playing so great either. So that just all came up to me and was the perfect storm of me having a panic attack. It was November 5th of 2017 against the Atlanta Hawks. So I ran to the locker room. So much of the time I had just exploded in anger, or it was just a major outburst, and I always had somewhere to go. In this setting, it was extremely public, and I ran into the locker room, you know, shortness of breath, feeling like I was going to faint, feeling like I was having cardiac arrest. And I thought, you know, this, you know, is this it? Like, I don't know what's going on. So I ended up actually, you know, on oxygen and on the floor of my athletic trainer, Stephen Spiro's office. And after that, went to the Cleveland Clinic, you know, one of, if not the best hospital in the world, depending on who you ask, and everything checked out. So I thought, okay, what just happened? So that was a turning point in my life where I had to look at myself in the mirror and say, okay, I need to seek some therapy. But it wasn't until it actually got worse before it got better.
The headline of the piece is everyone's going through something. And you say for 29 years, I thought about mental health as someone else's problem. Yep. And that asking for help was a form of weakness that could derail my success in sports or make me seem weird and different. And you call publicly writing this the biggest thing in your entire career.
100%.
And it's so relevant now in this moment because so many people can't even go to therapy,
right,
let alone afford therapy.
Right.
And their mental health issues are exacerbated in a moment like this.
No, they absolutely are. And I think because of COVID-19 and you're isolated and you're feeling that sense of loneliness, this is really a pandemic that nobody's talking about and that needs
mental health
needs to continue to come to the forefront, and people need to talk about, because it just, I don't know. I can't really put my finger on something or reach out and touch something that is more, is a bigger thief of human potential. We look at my fund, there's four pillars of stigma. So it's just incredibly important that we continue to speak and talk about the stigma. And then we have education, really that next generation, focusing on them and that younger demographic, because they're our future. Whether it be, bipolar disorder, whether it be schizophrenia, acute anxiety or anxiety disorder, depression. I mean, it's really a young people disease. 50% are diagnosed by the age of 14 and 75% are diagnosed by the age of 24. This is so important to me, too, on the depression side, because in Oregon, from ages 10 to 34, suicide is the second leading killer of that age group. And I had certain, really, really acute feelings at that age. But, below the age of 14, even considering them going and taking their lives or, having those type of feelings or going to the ER is just baffling to me. So here, I'll be quick on these two. So there's education or stigma, education. And then we have tools. You talk about not being able to go to therapy at this time. I think it's actually going to be awesome to see what's going to come out of this and how we stay in touch and how we're able to communicate and see people. But it's going to be really important that we have tools. And then the last one is research. So that kind of, we have a lot of very, very cool things happening at the fund that are going to come out, in Mental Health Awareness Month in May, but also moving forward, some really big things.
I'm so glad you bring up youth. You've talked about suffering silently. And before you were 29, you were really private. You didn't share any of these struggles. You didn't even talk to friends or family about them. And mental health issues are in everyone's family, or they will be, as you've said. And, I don't even know if I've ever talked about this, but my aunt, my mom's sister is schizophrenic. And, she has to live in a group home, and she was diagnosed when she was 18 years old. And it completely changed the trajectory of her entire life and our entire family's life. And it can strike so young, and everyone has their story. You're so right about being a pandemic, because we're all talking about COVID-19. This is all we're talking about, and we just often don't talk about mental health. And you bring up the issue of men and boys, and you say men and boys are probably the farthest behind. You know that because you lived that.
Yeah, especially as a young man, too. I mentioned, beating your emotions into submission. That was so much of what I did. I had that playbook of you don't show weakness, you don't cry. And, that would get me so worked up and I'd get so angry, I would cry. But I just didn't know how to express my emotions in a healthy way. And I think keeping it bottled in, my fuse was so long that it would just snap, and I would get so angry, and I'd go to my room and, not come out for a while. I think that was so much the case. But I remember a story for me is in high school, I wanted to be accepted so bad by so many people that, I lost sight of how, if I was trying to, be funny or, it was happening at somebody else's expense, that not only was it hurting that person, it was hurting me as well. There's just a lot to unwrap and peel layers back and consider when it comes to that age group.
You've said that the worst thing when we talk about mental health in this moment, where so many of us are so isolated, and that can just exacerbate existing problems. You've said the worst thing that could come out of this is if we come out unchanged. So what is your message to everyone listening? I think especially to the young folks that look up to you, in terms of coming out of this on the other side as well as we possibly can after having endured so much loss as a world.
Yeah, I mean, at least for me, a form of therapy or feeling better is just practicing acts of kindness. I think it's so important, and checking in, you know, being able to use the Zooms, the IG lives, the FaceTimes, whatever it may be, just checking in on people, even those that you are just, you know, slightly outside of your circle. I think it's good to just feel that sense of community.
Social distance, but don't isolate.
Oh, that's incredibly
call
key.
People, right? Yeah, pick up the phone or the Zoom or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny. I've came, you know, if I have 10 free minutes now, I'll just be like, you know what? What's the best way to, you know, take advantage of this time? Sometimes I heard this the other day, an introvert with really well polished extrovert qualities, I think
it was. I was going to say, you don't totally strike me as an introvert.
But. Yeah, but I really am, because actually my this is where it was so bad. It really was in Minnesota. My social anxiety was so high. But now that, you know, I've done this and continue to speak about this, like it, you know, I always say nothing haunts you like the things we don't say. So the fact I've, you know, kind of lived life out in the open, and I try and stress that, and I wish I could have said that to my younger self and had the presence of mind to do that. You know, that's something that I always say. So that social distancing and not social isolation, I think is huge. And then just picking up a new skill. So when, you know, for me, it's like when you come out of this, it could be, you know, extremely valuable to use, or it's just something that, you know, helped you get through this time, curb the stress, curb the unknown, and just was a something that got you through it and was effortless in passing the time. So I think it's a really healthy way to curb some of these feelings.
After a quick break, we talk about how Kevin is helping the Cleveland arena workers who've lost their jobs during this pandemic. That's next. And now more of my conversation with NBA player Kevin Love. The league as a whole, and you as a player, suffered severe losses this year. David Stern, just a remarkable man. I felt lucky to know him through my alma mater, Columbia, and just always made me laugh every time I talked to him. And a remarkable leader. And his memorial service was just filled Radio City Music Hall with the most incredible tributes. You lost him, and then the sudden loss of Kobe Bryant. I'm just interested in how that's affected you in terms of thinking about the fragility of life.
It really has. I was saying the other day, if 2020 is that, offered me or taught me anything, it's that being in the present and enjoying the moment. I think a lot of people will, coming out of this, they'll really stick to that or gravitate towards that, because I mean, it's just so precious. Like, we didn't expect to lose David Stern so fast. We, you know, Kobe Bryant, he's like invincible, and Gianna, she's so precious. He was supposed to go on and be the best player in the WNBA. Like, she had, you know, that Kobe Bryant blood running through her, and it's just incredibly, incredibly tragic. And then life as we know it from COVID-19 has kind of put all of our lives on pause. And, you know, having even the people that, if you consider the people staying at home, and then you have, you know, the people that are the first responders, the frontline workers, nurses, doctors, pharmacy workers, grocery store workers, so on and so forth, like those heroes, their life isn't the same. They're having to choose between you know, being with their family for extra time during this really tough time, especially if they have kids and they're having to, you know, teachers are more heroes. They're having to try and help them with their schooling and help them growing up.
Well, I think we all agree teachers should be paid $1 billion
it's
a year
crazy.
After
like,
this.
That's another thing I can't even wrap my head
they
around.
They should make Kevin Love salaries.
Right. If you're trying to get me to do long division with my kid, that's just not happening. But it's something that is not lost on me, and I'm sure is not lost on a number of players throughout the league. And we all have givens in our life that are scary looking forward, that will grow old or will die, or you know we're going to lose people we love, and we'll have to endure like identity shaking professional failures and humiliations. And, you know, I think through that, it's, you know, that's where we're meant to find meaning and purpose in our life. But it sometimes is, you know, really, and you have to take a step back and just say like, wow, life is incredibly precious. And I have so many great stories about, you know, David Stern, who named me to my first All-Star team as an injury replacement back in 2011. It's funny.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he has a bit, you know, a huge impact on my life as well. And, I have many great stories about him, but that was actually the All-Star that it was in Los Angeles. So where I was born, and that Kobe actually told me on the bench that game, he's like, how you get all those rebounds? I said, you know, I just try and do my work early. And he stopped me mid-sentence. He goes, you know what? I'm gonna lead this game in rebounding tonight. And I was like, yeah, okay. Like Kobe's 6'6". Like, all right. So Dirk looked at me. Nowitzki looked at me at the time. He goes, he's the only guy I've ever seen that when he says something like that,
he'll do it.
And like, yeah, people say that and like, oh, they come close. It's like, no, he's going to do that. So he actually ended up being MVP of that game. And I have from 2012 and just knowing Kobe for so long, I have so many great stories about him. But those two are connected because it all happened in it was in L.A. So that was a really, really special time. But, you know, those guys are going to be missed because they were so monumental to the game for so long.
Yeah. And it just a reminder to all of us, I think, about how are we spending our time, yeah, and not just, you know, our weeks, but each and every moment of each and every day. And this moment gives us that perspective too. Let's talk a little bit about what you did. This is actually the first time when I saw this news, I was like, let's get him on the show. It was after the morning after you gave huge donation, $100,000 to keep the workers at your arena. I have the photo, which I'll put out on social media, but you know, men and women that you know that serve food at the arena, that clean it, that, you know, keep it up and running, that have no job now, to keep them paid. Where did that idea come from?
I just had the sense that it was going to be extremely stressful for people. And for me, I was just considering that anxiety of maybe, you know, not seeing your next paycheck, or, you know, some of these people working paycheck to paycheck. And these are the people that had taken care of us for so long. So I was like, you know what? I want to take care of them. You know, I know a number of them on a first name basis. And I just thought it was very important to just help alleviate some of that stress that they might have felt. So right away, I just called and said, hey, I want to donate this money.
Yeah.
Boom, just got it out
but
there.
But then a lot of people followed. The Cavs, I think, like management, yep, the arena,
stepped
other
up.
Players, LeBron, Steph Curry.
Yep.
So it's, I mean, are the players, I know you can't speak to all the arenas around the country, but for you guys there in Cleveland, are they going to keep getting paid throughout this?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, I think it's, you know, really important that, and that just continues that sense of community and family, because, I mean, they were, a number of them have been working there for years. And we don't just see them at our 41 home games, but it's, you know, every time we come in there for an event, or every time we, you know, bring our families, or every time we go there to shoot or work out, like they're manning the building, they're working there. And, you know, the people that have been a part of our story, especially in 2016, where we won a championship, like they really feel like they're a part of that, especially here in Cleveland. They feel
sure,
like they're a part of a extended family. So, you know, I love that.
And you haven't talked as much about this, but I was reading about Project Frontline,
yes,
which is delivering donating meals to the frontline healthcare professionals at the Cleveland Clinic, a place that was obviously monumental in your mental health journey.
Yes.
Now you have a chance to bring it full circle.
Well, I think that's a great point, especially, you know, you had mentioned other players stepping up and you know, kind of finding their own lane. Like, it didn't have to be just, you know, arena workers or people that, you know, were affected firsthand by what you do or your profession. It could be distributing meals. It could be, you know, local food banks. It could be working with the CDC or the World Health Organization, or even I think Carl Anthony Towns did it. And, you know, take a step back for a second and say rest in peace to his mother, who I got a chance to know. His family was incredibly tough.
Just last week.
So that's another tough loss for the NBA family. And just really, really sad. But he had donated a lot of money to the Mayo Clinic. And as you know, that's like a that's really an institution there. It's like
hometown pride for this Minnesotan.
And being and seeing it at firsthand, they're like, they just, their whole idea is they just want to heal people. So that was really, really cool to see him do that. But Project Frontline, it was I wanted to find a way. Now, since this whole thing is evolving and, you know, people are working so hard to keep us safe, like, how do I affect multiple groups? So I had, you know, the frontline workers, the people that are working every day to, you know, make sure that we're safe, as I mentioned, but also small businesses and to help the economy. So we were just making sure that they were fed, they had everything they need, and they were able to stay healthy throughout this. So we're actually doing another one this Friday with a food drop to all, you know, a number of the doctors and nurses at the Cleveland Clinic. And this is, you know, an easy thing to replicate. It could be activated really in any city. But I just wanted to continue to give back to this community here. And, you know, I'd hope that others would do the same, no matter how small or how big that effort can be. It's just incredibly important that we just continue to pay it forward.
You know, you bring up small business, and there is the health crisis, but there's also an economic crisis.
Yep.
that you and I know nothing about, right? We're still getting our full paychecks.
Yep.
And I mean, know nothing about in that we're not living it, but I care deeply about this. I know you care deeply about this. And I just wonder your thoughts. Governor DeWine in Ohio has really, where you are, really led the way in so many respects on this during this crisis. And he's now band together with other Midwest governors like Minnesota, et cetera, Michigan, to decide, you know, how do we balance this? When do we reopen? And I just wonder what you hope is considered in the decisions that are made over the next few weeks about getting people back to work, but also protecting people.
Yeah, I think it's, like you said, it's incredibly important that, you know, these within the workforce, we get people back, you know, to their daily lives, not only to, you know, stimulate the economy, to feed their families, to feel like they're a part of something bigger, but they have to be safe. I mean, it's the same thing if you consider Adam Silver, especially in the way that we travel.
He really led
the way. And especially, you know, he kind of acknowledged that, hey, we're pretty much super spreaders because we're going on planes, we're going into the arenas, we're going to hotels. So I think, you know, it's another thing that's not lost on, you know, the governors and these state representatives that, okay, we need to make sure that we kind of slow pace this thing, slow roll this thing, and getting people back into work, but making sure it's done very safe. But that's their genius and not mine. But I'm pretty certain that you know, they're going to do the best thing and what's right for humanity. But yeah, it is incredibly important, as you know, an economy and global economy, to get these people back to work, especially if it's essential,
or find a way to provide more for them. You know,
sure.
I mean, it's a tragedy to see all those small businesses, at least in the first round, that didn't get this funding. Just a few quick questions before we go. I was reading a GQ interview you did a while ago, and you were, it was on a different topic, but you said, you know, this is a league that African Americans built. And, you know, the disparity that we're all seeing in terms of how this virus is hitting the African American community so many more African Americans are contracting it versus, you know, the percentage of population that they are in pretty much every state and dying from it. And we know a lot of this is because of the sort of decades of disparity in treatment, socioeconomic issues and healthcare. I just wonder for you as someone who so many of your fellow players in the league and friends are African American. What did you think when you started seeing those numbers?
I mean, just that they continue to be underserved. I can speak on it, especially in terms of mental health and physical health, is that, you know, in these underprivileged or underserviced areas, you know, these kids, I mean, just aren't getting treated. And a lot of them are going through you know, various things at a younger age. And for that, they're susceptible to a number of underlying health conditions. And a lot of that can be coming from both the physical and the mental. But even if you just look at in terms of, you know, people of color that are therapists or people of color that work in psych departments or anything of that nature, it's less than 5%. So, you know, they're not growing up or learning to trust, you know, the health system in this way, because they in some cases they feel like they've failed them. So that's another thing that I'm really trying to stress is, and my therapist is a person of color and person that, you know, I've connected with in a very big way. So I think people need to find a way that are in the medical field to, you know, have a lot of diversity. I think it's so important to see that, because that human potential and the, you know, getting underserved in such a big way and that getting lost on people is something that needs to change moving forward. And I think you make a great point. Like this is incredibly, incredibly important to, you know, it's not just about, you know, taking that curve and, you know, making sure that it's dropping off, but also in underserved areas, making sure that everybody's getting an equal shot and everybody's getting a fair shot at staying healthy, living and reaching their potential in that way. Cause this is something that, again, like this virus doesn't care who you are. It doesn't discriminate, but you know, there's some people that, you know, are, you know, things are available to them far more so than they would be elsewhere. So that's a great point that you bring up. And I wish I could speak to it more at length, but,
well, it sounds like you're trying to do, you know, more work on that, on that front. Yes. And I think, look, I think if we return to the world that we were before, having this inequality that already existed, but so glaring now in this crisis, then we failed everyone.
I agree. We have to come out of this changed, you know, not by nature. I'm not always all the way optimistic, but I feel like there is a lot of good that can come out of this, and it'll be eye-opening. And that's, you know, obviously, you know, we've been trying to tackle that topic for a long time, but maybe it took something, you know, devastating for a number of people across, you know, all socioeconomic status, gender profile, sexual preference, like whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It just does not discriminate. So that's the hope for all this.
Yeah, it's true. I think you said it. Nothing unites us like a common enemy, and that's what we have now. Also, just to end, a shout out to an amazing woman in your life, Dr. Michelle Krask, who I know has done a lot of this work with you at UCLA, where you went to school, and just a lot of credit to her as well.
Yeah, big shout out to Michelle Krask. She's been incredibly important in my understanding of you know, why things are the way they are, you know, what research is going to look like going forward. And she's a superstar. I mean, I remember just looking at all the things she had done in her career up to this point and all her, you know, accolades and how many lives she's saved. And you can't put, you know, we can't put a number on that, but she just, her whole life is geared towards, you know, helping people. So she's an inspiration for me. I feel like she should have her, you know, like number retired in the rafters or something, like a statue.
Because she's just, that jersey.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I come in, I'm coming down the court and I'm telling, you know, I feel like I'm telling people, hey, this is my experience and this is what I've learned. And then, you know, I'll lob it up to her and she'll just, you know, she'll slam it home, because she is so smart. She takes everything that I've said and makes me, I guess, I don't know if she makes me look good, but she's like, okay, this is why you feel that way. And she's so transparent. And yeah, the understanding is so important.
Kevin, thank you really for being outspoken on this front. It's a scary thing to step into when you're one of the first to speak out in your role, but you did. And I think it's changed people's lives. And in this moment, I think we all need to hear it. So thanks for the work you're doing. And awesome. Thanks for spending
thank
time
you,
with me.
I appreciate yeah. it.
Thank you so much for being with me today. If you enjoyed this episode of Boss Files, make sure to keep listening. Every week, we bring you a new conversation with a new leader about how they're navigating all of the uncertainty during this pandemic. And be sure to tune in to CNN's other podcasts to stay up to date on coronavirus and all the latest developments. Every weekday, you can hear my friend and colleague, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, on his podcast, Coronavirus Fact Versus Fiction. He walks you through the latest news, everything you need to know. And you should also listen to some of my other favorite CNN podcasts, like David Axelrod's Axe Files, The Daily DC, and more. You can find those at cnn.com/podcasts. As always, I want to know what you think. What did you like? What didn't you like? Who do you want to hear from? Leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. You can also find me on social media at Poppy Harlow CNN. We'll be back next week with another episode of Boss Files.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.